week's guest is Marcela Gonzalez Hernandez, who joins us from Toronto, Ontario. Originally from Mexico, Marcela came to Canada several years ago when she decided to attend Western University in London, Ontario. Eventually, Marcela moved to Toronto just prior to the start of the pandemic in 2020. Mars got her start in the industry doing bar photography. This eventually led to her developing a strong interest in working in hospitality. Mars has worked a number of roles from back of house to front of house, including dishwasher, hostess, server, and bartender. Currently, Mars organizes a number of record-breaking pop-up events, curating unique experiences that weave together an atmosphere of warmth and conviviality. You can also find Mars tending bar at Little Sisters Bar in Toronto. If you want to get in touch with Mars, the easiest way to do is get in touch on Instagram at MarceHDZGLZ or check the show notes for the link. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Industry Podcast. My name is Kip. This is Dan. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing very well. It's a nice spring day today.
Yeah.
Great. No snow, so that's welcome change. What about nothing snow with you?
A little snow in a couple of days.
Yeah, probably this weekend, I'm sure. Yeah. Only the weekdays when the weather's nice around here.
I'm doing good. Coming off the high of the eclipse.
Oh, yes.
So now that the eclipse is finally behind us, we can go back to talking full-time about the carbon tax.
Yeah. Did you make any eclipse-themed drinks for the bar?
No, we were closed, but I did have a friend who asked me if we were going to do that, which I thought was pretty funny. I did catch it, though. I was working during the day, and the woman who lives above one of my bars came down and had some of those fancy...
Oh, eclipse glasses.
Eclipse glasses, so I got to take a look at it.
Oh, you're lucky. I missed everything.
Yeah, well.
Damn funerals.
Here's what happened. It got dark,
yeah,
and then it got light again.
Yeah, well, that's good. Good to know. Good to
there's
know.
There's the play-by-play. We have a great guest coming your way in just a second, Marcela Hernandez-Gonzalez from Toronto. Before we get to her, we should mention that if you are enjoying what we're doing here on the Industry Podcast, then you should follow us, rate us, review us. That helps out tremendously. If you'd like to be a guest, it's info@theindustrypodcast.club. That's a place to hit us up for sponsorship as well, or DM us at The Industry Podcast on Instagram, where you will find the amazing artwork by Zach Hanna at zachhanna.co, ZAKHANNAH.co. He's doing some really cool new stuff on his website, so check him out.
Yeah, he's been pumping out some new stuff on Instagram lately, I noticed as well.
Yeah, it's really good. That guy's very talented and very creative. So check him out and check out all the stuff he's doing. Also, if you're in the Kitchener-Waterloo region, you should come check out my bars. There's Sugar Run, downtown Kitchener. That's at Sugar Run Bar on Instagram. Or Babylon Sisters in Uptown Waterloo. That's at Babylon Sisters Bar on Instagram. Come check those places out. Lots of stuff going on. Live music, burlesque shows, stand-up comedy, DJs, speed dating. We got everything.
Ooh, nice. Yep, bingo?
No, the bingo's over.
Yeah.
But all that other stuff. So check out those events. And you want to follow those Instagram pages if you want to know exactly what's going on. I think that's all I got to prattle on about before we bring in our guests.
Wonderful.
You got anything to say?
No, I'm all out of gas.
Well, nothing new there.
Yeah.
Okay. So welcome, Marcela Hernandez-Gonzalez. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for doing it. I know it's super. We were talking before we started recording how nice it is. And now we're outside finally here in Ontario. And instead, we're all inside talking over Zoom.
That's okay. I still have my window, but soon enough, probably going to head to River Park and have a beer there.
There you go. That's how you do it. Okay, so you grew up in Mexico, correct?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Mexico, and I came here for school. So I actually moved to Toronto almost 5 years ago, and before that, I was in London, Ontario.
Oh, sorry. So you went to Western?
I enjoyed my time there, but Toronto's good. Like, there's just like so many different pockets, but I moved here right before the pandemic hit. So I feel like I'm just discovering the city.
Right.
And I'm just like learning about like all these different like pockets and actual like restaurants and like the Toronto culture. But I like it. I just don't love the weather.
Yeah. What part of Mexico did you grow up in?
I grew up in the northern part of Mexico. It's a town called Torreon. So it's on the bordering like state with Texas, very close to Monterrey. So I'm working like industrial, not super touristy, but there's actually surprisingly now quite a cocktail scene itself there. So there's like a few really cool bars. Like there's like 10 Pound in Mexico is called there. And it's like, it's starting to become really big into the part of like the nightlife, which is awesome to see as well.
That's good. Yeah. And so you came to London, what, you would have been 18, 19 around that age?
Yeah. I went back and forth for a little bit. And then like 5 years ago is when I really like permanently moved to Canada. And I chose the perfect time. I moved right before the lockdown.
Oh, God.
Which was something. And then ever since I stayed. So here I am.
Yeah. So how did you settle on a school in London, Ontario? Do you have family there already at that point? Or
No. I'm actually the only one in my family that's here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I kind of
What were you going to school for, Mom? What were you going to school for that landed you in London?
I did I have 2 degrees. I did economics and marketing.
Oh, wow.
So I did that and I graduated from my marketing one like a year ago. So pretty recent out of school, which is pretty good. And now I'm just going right back to school, but like not really.
Oh.
I'm going to be doing like my W set. So
nice.
Like George Brown, which is like, I'm looking forward to it. I like it. Really enjoyed it. And it's been a time.
Yeah, W set. It's intense, but it's like definitely worth it. Have you started it yet or no?
No, I have not. Okay. I enrolled for it and then I was like, hey, just like a waiting game. But it's been a pretty busy few last months for me. So now that things are starting to ease down, I was like, hey, this is the time right before like summer hits as well with like party season.
Right.
It's like perfect timing.
Yeah. Okay. So when you're going to school in London, what made you decide to move to Toronto eventually?
So I actually worked a lot with what got me actually in the industry was photography. I started by doing bar photography at nightclubs. Oh. And I ended up back of house as a dishwasher because like my English wasn't the greatest. And I was doing a lot of like nightlife photography in like student bars. So after that, I worked in photography for a bit. And over here in Toronto, I had like a bunch of like photo shoots I was assisting and doing these things. And when I got like a job opportunity here, I kind of stayed. And after that, during the pandemic, I had a little incentive that was like cocktails TO and like basically like a brand would pay for me and my friend to go to a restaurant and like take photos. And so it was free for the restaurant. And then they would get photos for like their takeout programs and wherever during COVID when things started to get really big. And that's how I really like started to get into like the hospitality industry. And I kind of decided to like stay in Toronto a little bit more.
Mm.
And I made like, I ended up finishing school online here in Toronto.
Oh,
like
okay.
With the pandemic and everything.
Yeah.
It started as like a co-op. Yeah, sorry. I came to Toronto as part of a co-op and I just ended up just making the move.
Right. Well, yeah. It's one thing about the pandemic is that everything moved to, you could kind of do everything from your room, right? So it didn't really matter where you were living.
I feel like there was so many phases of the pandemic. I remember at first it was like so intense and everyone was like, wasn't sure what to happen. And like towards the end, it was a bit of a free for all.
Yeah.
but doing school on Zoom a bit was like a little bit weird, but it actually made like a few friends throughout it. But it was like a little bit weird because at some points you realize that you haven't actually met these people in person.
Right.
And all of a sudden, like I ran into one of my, I guess, like classmates recently and like we had talked to her forever, but we actually never met in person. I'm like, oh yeah. We literally were best friends for 2 years.
Did you find that awkward or is it just like kind of the same? Because it's funny, like we started doing this podcast right before the first lockdown, right?
So yeah, it was a couple of weeks beforehand.
So we have met tons of people over Zoom like this, like we're meeting you. And I have since met some of these people in person traveling around. And sometimes it's like just talking to an old friend almost because you've had this conversation before. And sometimes it's a little awkward.
I think it kind of really depends on the person and the situation where you meet them.
Mm-hmm.
I did have had some like awkward ones. I feel like it's the same as I compare to when I see a regular outside the bar.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes it's great. And they're like your best friends. I actually have some of my regulars I'm like from my old job. I'm like so close with that. I still hang with them and like I go drinking with them. But then there's some other regulars that I have like bumped into. And it's like there's like they can't even look at me in the eyes.
Right.
But I'm like, I always say to my regulars to always tell me if they want to welcome or welcome back.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it depends on the kind of person.
Yeah.
Thankfully, for the most part, it's always been like really chill, but there's been a few that I'm like, probably okay without seeing you again.
So what was the first bar that you ended up working at when you moved to Toronto?
So I actually, my first job in the industry was at a Finn Michaels as a dishwasher. And eventually I moved to front of house as a server. When I first moved to Toronto, when Nordstrom was still around, they actually had a full service restaurant. And I worked there quite a bit. And I was actually surprised. Like it's like a restaurant in, not even just in the mall. It was a restaurant in a retail store.
Mm-hmm.
But it was surprisingly busy. And like the food was like, it was dope. So I worked at Nordstrom Bar Verde for a few years. That was kind of my consistent place. And then when I really kind of like worked at somewhere else was Pinkerton Snack Bar in the East End of Toronto. That was kind of my first time like really like working with cocktails, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like more like a nightlife experience with cocktails. They were both like really great and like, but just very different, I would say.
Yeah, I'm very curious about that whole sort of Nordstrom's experience because first of all, it's such a weird thing that shit even exists, like that there's like a restaurant in a retail store. But like, so the crowd, like what kind of a crowd are you getting at a spot like that?
It was wild because we would have like our regulars and like there was definitely a type of people who like dine there. But then we would also have like this crazy like guests and like you would see everything in there. It was like in Yonge and Dundas.
Mm-hmm.
So you never really knew what your day looked like. We always get people from the office towers and like from all in the surroundings. So lunch was always really packed, a lot of business, things like that. But then you would also see like the midday, like people who were shopping, just starting for like glass of wine, whatever it was, like happy hour. And then nighttime, like you would see full on dates, anniversaries.
Really?
And people were so like loved it. And to me, I was thinking like, who is bringing a first date to a restaurant
in a mall?
Like, I was like, no offense to me or anyone working. I wouldn't say that was the most romantic thing I ever seen. And people were like, have like dates, have like anniversaries. Someone celebrated their wedding there.
What?
Oh,
yeah. It was crazy. Mm. You saw all these different like personalities that I never expected. And sometimes celebrities would come by and they will have like a private like dining area, like in their styling rooms, or you would see so many different personalities there versus when you go through a cocktail bar and you kind of expect to see more like the cocktail enthusiasts, like the industry crowd, like people who drink here will be all over the place. It was quite an interesting place to work, but I like enjoyed it. And I'm still really close with the crew who was there at the same time as me, which is until Nordstrom shut down. But it was a wild experience. People would fight over, we had this booth that overlooked the mall.
Mm-hmm.
It was like window booths, and the politics and the drama behind getting a booth every day was so wildly intense. I always felt like if a host could work at Nordstrom and handle those people, like for me, they were like, could get to work anywhere that they ever wanted. And it turned out that like one of the host, I ended up hiring her when I made the move to Pinkerton's, and she's great. Like she's like my little bar baby, and now she's doing her own managing stuff. But it's just like it was a different attitude dealing with people who wanted to sit on the booths. It was crazy intense. Like I saw people would like scream, people would like reserve, people would call. Like I saw someone like reserve like months in advance because they just wanted like a window seat, and I'm like, it's a great restaurant, but it's still a restaurant in the retail store.
And you're just looking at the mall.
And they're looking at the mall, people watching. It was it was crazy. And then also we used to have a more cocktail bar on the second floor that they mostly did like snack style food and like drinks and cocktails, and it would be packed.
Crazy.
It's in the middle of the man's floor at Nordstrom Eaton Center.
It's a good business model when you think about it though, because like you said, you have the office buildings or the offices around there that if the restaurant and the bar is good, they don't care that it's close to their office, a good spot to come for lunch, but they have to kind of walk through the store to get to the restaurant. So maybe you're getting some like sort of impulse buy ideas as you're walking into you're like, oh, maybe I'll come back and shop because I saw this that I liked or whatever.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely agree with that. And I think it was so smart at the entrance they used to have like the Nordstrom Cafe. Mm. So you go there for your coffee, you have like your cocktail in the second floor when you're cruising, looking at different things, and you really had to go through the whole store to get to the restaurant. So I think it was also like making sure that if the customers needed a break from shopping or errands, they still had the accessibility of a restaurant to take a break, have a coffee, sit down for a minute, have a soup. The soups there were actually pretty bomb. They were so good. But I thought it was a great business model. And the whole store was licensed, so people could shop and drink.
Oh, that's even better.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
That's the good part. If you could just have a beer, try on some clothes.
Yeah.
That'd be fucking smashed by it.
Sure. You'd have to, especially you, because you'd have to buy so many of the clothes that you spilled on.
That is correct.
You know, dry cleaning services there and everything. And the happy hour, too, was ridiculous. Like, it was like premium spirits. And our pours were ounce and a half for like $6. And like beers were $5. Burgers were like $10. It was the happy hour was so incredibly good. And we would just get full for it. So it was an interesting place to work. But it like worked. We had fun. It was a very close-knit group of people. And we have so many good memories of that place. But it definitely could get a lot of times, especially during Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And Christmas and Mother's Day. But Christmas season, it was just...
I'm sure that must have been insane.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like reservations so much in advance, like fully staffed, complete rotation. There's a theater right in front of us. So many people come there before like a concert or a show, and it was quite popular. So you saw a lot of different types of people. And then the regulars were diehard regulars to the point that like you walked in, you knew the order exactly how they are. And they knew you, you knew them. There was like part of each other's, like we would get worried when we didn't see the regular ever so often. We had a regular called Michael, and I still to this day remember his order. It was like a burger. He wanted no cheese, onions, but on the side.
Oh.
And he wanted two of the aiolis, the house-made aiolis. And sometimes when he was being bad, he would do salad. When he was being bad, he would do fries. And when he was like, normally he would do like a half and half. It's like, you remember everything. I like, you see them for so many, you see them twice, three times a week for 3 years. And it feels weird to like not see them or like, being like, I wonder what they're up to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they probably wonder what you're up to. So then you moved to the cocktail. Sorry. What was the name of the first cocktail bar you started working at?
Pinkerton's Snack Bar.
Right. Pinkerton's. Yeah. And so now you're bartending, you're learning about craft cocktails. Talk to us about that adjustment.
So I had work, like I would say, like as a bartender, like at Nordstrom and like at other spots, but it was very much like more corporate, like milestones, kind of vibe, like everything's like pre-batch recipe or frozen bellinis and like pouring pints. And at Pinkerton's, it was kind of my first real, like I knew, or I thought I knew my classics, or I thought I knew my basics. And I went there and I was like, whoa. And that was like a very different change of pace for me from like going from super corporate restaurants, like Fit McCool's, Nordstrom, to this like 40 seat, like snack bar in the East End. So that was a big change, but I like truly, really enjoyed it. Like I feel it really gave me like an into the industry, and I learned a lot, like how to make a proper daiquiri, all these things like about glassware, and a completely like different vibe. And also like a very different approach to connecting with customers versus I would say like the corporate training that you get like a Nordstrom, Milestones, like any type of care restaurants. So it was like a big, it was a great adjustment. I had a blast. It was a really great learning experience for me. I got to do my first few, like I did actually ended up doing my first like menu there. My first cocktail menu was with Pinkerton's, and my first like pop-up I also did at Pinkerton. So have a great amount of love for that place. And it's like, yeah, it's fun. They have their own little canned cocktail line called Dan and My Kids, and they're crushing it.
You know who else has their own cocktail line these days is Civil Pours. Civil Pours originally started with Civil Liberties in Toronto, a bar that most people are famous with. And Civil Pours, they're doing cocktails that are produced sustainably by some of Canada's best bartenders using proprietary patented vacuum distillation technology. Were you aware of this?
I was not.
Oh, well, it's weird because I told you about it last week.
I drink a lot.
Well, if you like to drink a lot, this could also work in your house. I think they're targeting mostly bars because if you're at a high volume cocktail bar like my bars are, pumping out lots of cocktails very quickly and people are still asking for the classics, Civil Pours is what you're looking for. We're actually using them at Babylon Sisters right now for the espresso martini.
Oh, really? What other cocktails do they offer?
They have an old fashioned. If if you're a Mad Men type of person. Mm-hmm. That's been super popular since Mad Men. and it is not slowing down, let me tell you. Mm-hmm. So we're pumping out at both of my bars tons of old fashions every night. These are already bottled or kegged in 20 liter kegs. They taste exactly like the classic. I can't even tell you, it's like perfect. And it saves you so much time, but it also helps with your margins because they're reasonably priced. You can buy them in 750 ml bottles or 20 liter kegs, and you can mark them up appropriately and still make your margins off of these if you're at a bar or a restaurant. Or if you're like an at-home alcoholic like yourself, you could probably just get a case of these bottles just for your house, because they have old fashioned, they have margarita, the jalapeno margarita I'm a big fan of, the whiskey sour, and the espresso martini. And I mentioned this before, but the beauty of both the espresso martini and the whiskey sour is, even though they're coming out of a keg or a bottle pre-batched, when you shake them, just with a simple shake, you get that foam that you need, the perfect foam at the top of a whiskey sour or an espresso martini.
Ooh, nice. Mm-hmm. It saves a bit of time.
Oh my God. It's been a lifesaver for my bartenders at Babylon Sisters. I will tell you that right now, especially with the espresso martini, now that that's back. All these cocktails are cyclical. The espresso martini is just super popular again, at least here in Kitchener-Waterloo. And these are a lifesaver, because rather than having to, you know, get your own espresso beans, make your own recipe for this, these are created by unbelievable bartenders who worked probably originally at Civil Liberties.
Is it a very sustainable operation as well?
It is sustainable. They are all produced sustainably. They're reusing products from other bars and restaurants. I know that the Rep Madison told me about a couple of the different places they're working with, and I'm not sure if we're allowed to disclose that, so we can talk to her about that. Yeah. But they're working with other bars or restaurants, taking their waste, reusing it into these cocktails that they then produce in their own distillery now in Toronto, and then bottle and or keg.
Where can I find more information about this?
Well, what you want to do is, if you're interested in this product, and you really should be, especially if you're a high-end cocktail bar that's pumping out these classics in high volume, sales@civilpours.com. That's sales@civilpours.com if you want to reach out to them. Like I said, I can't recommend the product enough. It saves time. It works perfectly with your margins, so you don't have to worry about the markup. And if you just love classic cocktails and you're at your house, but you don't want to go to the process of making your own drinks, or maybe you're just a shitty bartender, let these guys do it for you. It's sales@civilpours.com. Get a whole case of this stuff there. I can't recommend it enough. The cocktails are amazing. And you're supporting a local Ontario business. So
perfect. Wonderful.
All right. sales@civilpours.com. Marcella, back to you. So let's talk about...
I love Maddie, and I love Nick Kennedy, and I love Joel. I love those guys. I think they do freaking great things.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to see them at my local coffee shop, Civil Pours.
Yeah, Civil Pours, sales@civilpours.com. See, so we've got even another person who can attest to the quality of Civil Liberties and their drinks. Let's go back to talking about you. Let's talk to you about where you are working currently.
So I'm currently working at Little Sisters, Indonesian Dutch fusion food, snack styles. Everything's meant to be shareable. Pretty heavy rum based like bar, but there's like everything in there. Like, you're gonna find your tequilas, your gins, like there's something for everyone there for sure. And they both locations are in uptown in Leslieville and downtown in King and Portland. They both have a speakeasy component to them. Mike and Jen, the owners, are like probably some of the best people I ever work for. They're fantastic. They know what they're doing, and they really like that cocktail like culture. So I really like how like they have like triple X, and they have this menu paying a lot of respect to a lot of people who brought cocktail culture to Toronto. Like one of my friend and my mentor that like I absolutely adore, like Michael Webster, one of his like signature cocktails. And obviously they have I Know to Sandy and a few others, like, and then Dave Mitty has there as well. So it is pretty cool what they do. And I adore them. I'm learning a lot, definitely. And I had my second rum dinner this Sunday, and it's crazy to see what the rum community brings. Like it was crazy. I was pretty wasted at the end, but I got to try some amazing rums, and it's like pretty unique experience. It's a whole different community that Robin has included me and brought me to be part of, but it's insane. It's like opened on my eyes to this spirit category and this style of bartending that I was also not used to.
Yeah, we were talking before we started recording because Sugar Run is also a rum-based bar. We do we use all different spirits in the cocktails, but we kind of focus on rums on our back bar and a lot of different high-end and aged rums. And it wasn't a spirit I was super familiar with before we decided to go this way with the concept. And we were talking before we started recording about how you were sort of the same, like discovering rums as well. So talk to us a little bit about some of your favorite rums that you've gotten to experience.
So I come to learn that I really love agricole style rums.
Oh yeah.
Like fantastic. Like I absolutely adore them. And definitely I think like Jamaican rums. I got to try an Hacienda. It was called, and I was so blown. It was like high esters rum. I don't tend to shy away from, I might go all over the place. Cause also I'm going to tell you how Foursquare 2010 is one of the best rums there is and was, and that's a completely different flavor profile. But I just like, I really enjoy the versatility of it. And then having someone like Robin, like Rowing Wayne, like teaching me all these things, he's like an encyclopedia for rum. Half the time, I don't know what he's talking about, but it's super interesting to hear him talk about all these things and the palates and the worlds and like the history of it is super, super cool. As well as I'm very fond of Havana. Like 7 and the Cuban Smoked. I really love that brand. And I definitely have friends very close to my heart, like Scott and Fatima, that work for that brand. And I think they're doing really cool stuff. I love the vibe and like everything they do for the brand here in Canada. It's been really eye-opening. Like all the experiential like learning that they have provided is like super sick and super cool. And I look forward to them all the time. My favorite like memories at Little Sister so far is like at Batavia. It's like this like tiny, it's like the speakeasy at Uptown. And you get so surprised at the amount of like cocktail lovers that come by there. And they're so willing to just try absolutely anything. So I ended up having now like what is like considered regular the other day, just bring me little samples of his rum collection to try. And I'm like, I feel like I shouldn't be drinking this $1,000 rum. But it's a really cool culture. I love everything about it. I love like the warmth of people. I love how like they're just like pulling all these like crazy rum things and they're just pouring them, you're enjoying them. It's been insane. We had the Greenstone guys from Washington, D.C. actually there on Sunday too as well. And it was cool to see just like the way that they use ingredients that are all around me, but maybe I'd never thought or I never had experience in the cocktail. And I experienced a lot of that with Little Sister as well, from going from like Pinkerton's, a very classic cocktail bar, very like classic driven cocktails, to then like someone with like Robin, who's definitely a lot more modernistic and has like a very different approach to cocktails. It's been crazy. It's been good. And I'm really looking forward to the summer with them.
And when did you start doing the pop-ups?
Started doing pop-ups a while back, I would say like 2 years ago. So they're a little bit different than, I guess, like how I would say Civil Liberties or Crybaby just had a pop-up yesterday, that they bring like guest bartenders from other cities. And I like love that. I think the way I have created mine is they're more themes, people at themes. So our really first really big one I did was with Altos and Del Maguey. And it was Dia de Muertos. It's probably my favorite holiday, maybe because I'm Mexican, but it's like my favorite holiday. And we had like the staff had full like Katrina's makeups, like face makeup, dressed up. We took the back bar at Pinkerton's and we made it an altar. And this back bar is like, there's 300 like bottles. It's like we put candles and we actually invite a guest bartender from some part of the city and we bring them in as part of like the bartending community. So we definitely try to do a lot more for industry appreciation, I would say. Provide that industry appreciation. Recently, we had one at Havana as well. Just like we did like a Cuban night and we would do like feature menu for both food and drinks and just trying to have a good time and give like hospitality like peeps like a little shout out, like a little thank you for everything you guys do in like the community. Just trying to make it like easy, cheap, simple. And they're pretty exciting. They're a ton of fun. And just connecting all these different like bartenders from parts of the city that sometimes you don't visit. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I become a creature of habit that I go to the same like 4 spots. And I feel like it's been a really cool way to connect different bartenders from different parts of the city. Or even I recently went to Ottawa to do a pop-up, hoping to do one in Montreal soon. And I think it's just a great way to like just connect like the whole community in a different level. Definitely looking to doing an emo night as well. I think that would be a lot of fun as well. But they're cool. They're good. They're very, I find working events really fulfilling. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with DNA drinks.
Mm-mm.
And dope cocktails. So my friend Adrian, he runs this mobile cocktail bartending services, and he also does like cannabis cocktails. And he invited me to work with him on an event, and I was like so mind blown. This guy was making snow cones and using dry ice on this like mobile bartending event, and creating like non-alcoholics, and then for the kids the snow cones, and then for the adults it was snow cones with booze. And he does all this massive like events and mobile bartendings. And I was like so mind blown, but I find them so fulfilling. And I find like, for example, like learning from Adrian, all that he's doing also was like absolutely incredible. I think it's like really, really cool to sometimes step outside your like bar routine
mm-hmm.
and try something different, or like have a little break from your everyday service. And with these pop-ups, I feel like we always hit a very different demographic, not just by meaning like non-industry people, like more industry people from a very different side of the city are coming, or like you get to see like very different people who like normally don't come to the bar are coming to the bar because it's a special event. The most outrageous one we had, which turned out to be fantastic, we had a hot dogs and wine night. So we had
dogs and wine, eh?
Yeah, so we actually had a pairing, and I was like, listen, like wine for me sometimes like has been so unapproachable, or it's like this like really bougie thing and people don't understand it, or it's like it can be so crazy. So we paired it wine, and we had a sommelier pairing this like stupid, incredible, beautiful wines, and we had like a different hot dog period. So like you would get this like, thanks to brand sponsorships, we had like this beautiful, beautiful wine flights for $25, which was the price of one glass. But for $25, they had a wine flight, and then you could get a hot dog flight.
Right.
And then you would get them, and then the som would come in and explain every bite and every like the pairing and everything. And that like that was a lot of fun. And it was really funny because the people who ended up coming were people who were playing at this like baseball softball league, like just recreationally. And then we had like this crazy wine, like people, like deeply respect from the industry there. And it was like two very like different groups, and everyone's just getting along, drinking wines and eating hot dogs. And it was like fantastic. That's so great. I find like it's a really good way to as well to like educate people and staff and other industry about things that might seem a little bit unapproachable.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the funny thing about like wine or spirits, like even if they're high end, the truth is they pair with almost any kind of food. You just got to find the ones that pair perfectly with it, right? So you can do something with like hot dogs, or I've been to ones that where it's just like wine pairings with like chips and popcorn and shit like that, you know, or like party mix and stuff like that, because they pair with anything, and it's, you just got to find the right pairing.
Oh, absolutely. I always say like, probably one of my favorite food pairings, no matter what it is going to be McDonald's fries, because they're so salty.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
it'll make you feel like shit later, but
just ignore it. Blame it on something else.
Yeah. No, it's but true. It's yeah. Because salt is great for pairing with alcohol, right? That's just one.
Oh, yeah. It makes you drink more. It works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give it to everyone for free all the time.
Yeah. So have you been involved in any of the cocktail creation at Little Sisters? I know you said you were doing some of it at Pinkerton's.
Yeah. Pinkerton's was my first, the bar manager at the time, like he really like honestly gave me a chance and trained me to be knowledgeable and good. And then now, for example, Michael, like I cannot thank him enough for, he gave me the flavor Bible, and he is such a patient human. And he's taught me a lot. So has Robin. And so Robin and, has pushed me to create like specials, to look at a little kind of like feature just like for the speakeasy, like its own little menu. So I do a lot of that, but they always humble me in the best way. I was really excited to show them this like one cocktail, and they just looked at me, and I was like, okay, but back to the drawing board. It's really good to have those people challenge you. So Robin and Jen have like really pushed me to R&D. Like they just constantly want me to R&D, and Michael, he has his new business ventures coming up. He's been the mastermind behind so many great cocktail spots, and he's about to open a new one. And he's always constantly like challenging me to do different stuff. So I'm very grateful to be involved in that beverage direction at these spots. But sometimes it can be a little bit intimidating with this industry giants when 4 years ago I was washing dishes.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's crazy, though. It's funny how fast it can develop, though, right? Like it's funny, you learn a shit ton in a small amount of time in this industry. So like it's very, we hear stories like this all the time. In a very short period of time, someone going from being back of the house, washing dishes, whatever, or being a bar back or a bus person. And then next thing you know, you're creating a cocktail menu at a high-end cocktail bar. These are great stories, but it's kind of the way the industry works.
Oh, yeah. So it's like it evolves, right? And then somehow you end up being like back, like in the back of those again. And I think like cooking and cocktail creation go so hand in hand. Like I think to understand drinks, you need to understand food and you need to understand like the same principle, salt, heat, everything. I find it really cool. And I always love using ingredients from the food that the restaurant is providing to the cocktails. Mm-hmm. I think it's like super cool. And we have this. For example, we use sumac a lot at Little Sisters, and it's something that people sometimes don't use. And I think it's like underused, but it's something that I previously used to not. It's such a good introduction to like different flavors, like different textures, different everything. I think to be a good like bartender, you should have a good understanding of food as well. Mm-hmm. It ties together so, so well. And I don't know, every time I see the back of house, I have so much respect for everything they do.
Yeah. And that's becoming more and more prevalent, that people using sort of chef techniques in cocktail making. It's almost like the new trend. So
yeah, the culinary techniques, it's using them all the time. I'm just like learning and like different way of thinking as well. Mm-hmm. Like there's a very different sense of urgency.
Yeah.
In front of house and back of house.
Oh yeah.
So I quite enjoyed it, but it's like been a really, really great experience. And I like value my time as well as like back of house, because you see like you have a different perspective as well. I think very similarly to like Robin, my current bottom manager, he also was like back of house, and which has like a really big appreciation for those people who are just starting, because we were those people and like we really just like see it, and it helps. I mean, I think I'm speaking for both of us. It really helps us not have like that ego and to like do whatever is needed for the best of servers, whether it's like you're buzzing tables or you're short in the kitchen and you have to be doing dishes. That's what you're going to be doing for the night, right? But it's great. I think it's great. Restaurants are this beautiful ecosystem.
Yeah.
A little bit disastrous at times, but I think everyone who works at restaurants likes to be stressed.
Yeah, it takes a certain type of personality, and you've definitely got it. So you are a credit to the industry, Marcel. We're glad that you are still doing this and that you've joined us in Canada here. So hopefully you stick around, and we really appreciate you giving us your time on the show today.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks again.
One more last question before you go. If there's anything you want to share on social media where people can find you, maybe get in touch with you about hosting a pop-up, what would be the best way to go about that?
Probably by my Instagram or my email, but I would say Instagram. I would say I'm a notoriously bad texter, as you have come to learn. I'll eventually get to it. I'm not a big believer on cell phones, but I try.
Sure.
So what is your Instagram handle?
It's MARCEHDZGLZ.
Perfect. I got that. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
Thanks again.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you. This was a super fun conversation. And next time I'm in Toronto, we'll come look you up.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks again.
Thanks very much.
Okay, bye, guys.
Bye.